Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
A pink and blue June morning found me at Bradgate, looking from the Griffin Hotel over a smooth sea to the lightship on the Cock Sands, which seemed the size of a bellboy. After breakfast, Scaife got from a house agent a key for the gates of the staircases on the Rough. I walked with him along the sands and sat down in a nook of the cliffs while he investigated. A dozen of them. I didn't want to be seen, but the place at this hour was quite deserted. And all the time I was on that beach, I saw nothing but the seagulls.
I can hear the sea. Welcome back to the Curiously Specific Book Club podcast. The podcast that is curiously specific about dates and locations in well-known books, presented by me, Tim Wright, and you, Lloyd Shepherd.
Me, Lloyd Shepherd. I am Lloyd Shepherd. We are standing on a beach. We've come from Scotland. We're at the other end of the country.
We have gone
a
long way.
Have we ever traversed so far in one podcast before?
I don't think we have.
So we've come all the way down from Galloway and Dumfries to the Kent coast. He talks about being at Bradgate. There's no such place as Bradgate.
No.
We are standing on a beach that's between Kingsgate Bay and Joss Bay. Quick plot summary of where we are on the 39 Steps.
And it is the 39 Steps by John Buchan that we're doing.
We're doing the 39 Steps by John Buchan. I just left that hanging in mysterious.
A classic thriller.
There's a similar vague, odd missing pieces in the book itself, as I just did there. A classic thriller. So we've followed our hero, Richard Hannay, from finding a dead man metaphorically and then a dead man literally in his flat in London.
Yes. And for some unknown reason, he decides he needs to run all the way to Scotland.
There's a conspiracy to... Initially, he thinks the conspiracy is to just do in a Greek leader called Karolidis.
Yes.
But then it turns out the conspiracy isn't that. It's a deeper conspiracy by the Black Stone Group.
That's right. And they're everywhere.
And they are looking to seize the naval plans of the British and French navies.
Yes.
From a group of men in Queen Anne's Gate.
Well, that's where nominally we would have come from, yes. So basically the chase is on. Yeah. Is that our hero Hannay...
We've had one chase through the hills in Scotland.
That's
now
it.
There's another chase.
Another chase.
Now
well,
he's the man doing the chasing.
The tables
right?
have turned.
Yeah.
The tables have turned. He's now aware that of this plan, and they're trying to hunt him. They have been trying to hunt him down. He's escaped by various means. Now he's managed to get to talk to some government officials. Finally, he went to the police. I don't know why he didn't do this weeks ago, frankly.
One of the mystifying decisions he makes.
And he's witness at Queen Anne's Gate to the meeting of the Admiralty staff and politicians.
With the First Lord?
Yes, and Lord Alloa, he's called, yeah. Right? But it turns out that he's not Lord Alloa.
No.
Is that he is one of the group.
Well, it's a man
absconded with the plans.
A man that Hannay has already met.
Yeah.
Disguised.
Didn't recognise him.
Disguised as another man.
Never recognised him. Not good with faces, is he? He's just not good with faces.
He just knows that he's somebody he's met before.
He's not a super recognizer.
He's not.
And anyway, now they've realised that the dastardly Germans have got hold of this stuff and we'll be making off to Germany with it.
On
and
a
again,
yacht.
In a curious twist of fate, is that rather than taking off straight away, because they're German and they had a plan to leave on the 15th of June,
yeah.
Even though they get hold of these plans on the night of the 13th of June or something,
they're just going to hang around for a couple of days. Because the Germans, there's some language about the Germans like sticking to their plans.
Yeah, they're not going to be knocked away from it.
Yeah,
no. So,
if only there was some river running out of London into the sea that ran straight to Germany.
But they've worked out that the 39 steps means somewhere down on the south coast.
Steps down to a beach
where a boat will be waiting for
them. A yacht.
Right. So where is this place? And they drive down to Bradgate. So that's why we're here.
We should say, a bit like we did on our Rogue Mail podcast, we're recording this whole podcast from the field.
That's right.
No studio bits. It's all real.
That's right.
It's all real.
It's all real. I know I faked a bit of outdoors stuff in Rogue Mail. Yeah. I'm going to try not to do that this time.
You'll need to.
But if I have to add a bit of sea stuff, no one's going to notice.
A few seagulls.
Anyway, we need to find a hotel. We need to find a house full of Germans.
A golf course
and some steps, dancing. Easy peasy.
Won't be a problem.
Just a quick note, by the way, about Queen Anne's Gate, which I found interesting, was that I was trying to work out, well, do these... would they have met there?
Well, should we explain quickly where Queen Anne's Gate is for people who don't know?
Yeah.
So Queen Anne's Gate is a street in St James's, which is runs down the side of St James's Park. So it's between Victoria Station and St James's Park. If you've watched a film set in London, in oldie-worldy London, or 18th or 19th century... there's basically one of two locations you've probably seen. You've either seen the Royal Naval College at Greenwich, which usually stands in for 17th century London,
yeah,
or you've seen Queen Anne's Gate or somewhere around it, which stands in for 18th century London. It's that kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Old Georgian houses.
And you know when we were sitting on Cheyne Walk for Up the Junction and saying what an extraordinary place this is that everybody's lived there?
Queen Anne's Gate's a bit like
this
that.
This is another one of those places where everybody's kind of lived there. The first Sea Lord did live there.
Oh, really? But he wasn't Lord Alloa, right?
No, he was Jackie Fisher.
Yes.
Although, actually, curiously, he retired in 1911 and then was brought back in the war in 1914. So, actually, he probably wasn't there.
No.
So that's one yellow card, I'd say. The other person who's there is Haldane, Richard Haldane, who would have been in the government. Mm-hmm. So he lived down there. Another guy, interesting guy, Edward Tennant, who was another politician, lived down there. He had a massive art collection there, which he opened to the public once a week. You could wander in there and look at his lovely art. Yeah. So that's quite nice. Now, the most important person who lived there was Mansfield Smith Cummings, who I think we've talked about before.
Mansfield Smith Cummings is Secret Service, right?
Secret Service. He's
the original M.
Yes, well, he was called C, of course, because he signed it C, but he's the original M.
Yeah.
He lived there.
Wow.
And in fact, when they first started their operations, they started their operations at the house there.
Wow.
So the model of the guy who Hannay goes to meet in his fly fishing cottage, who he goes to see who's the Secret Service and gets access to him.
Yes.
The model is Mansfield Smith coming for that.
And what's his... I've forgotten his name. It's in Berkshire somewhere.
That's right. Yeah. But then he has a house there.
Yeah.
So that he goes to his house there.
That's right.
So that kind of works. And they say that there used to be a tunnel there from Queen Anne's Gate to the headquarters of the Secret Service in Whitehall for him to walk through. Again... he wasn't there in 1914. He had a terrible car accident with his son in France.
Oh, dear.
In 1914. He was trapped in the car, and it's alleged that he chopped his own leg off to get out of the car.
Alleged by who?
And he had a false leg after that.
This is at sea?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Tough man.
Yeah, tough man.
Yeah.
Did he chop his leg off with? A penknife and a pencil.
A penknife, allegedly.
God.
Yeah. His son died, and he cut his leg off and got out.
Oh, dear.
But that's in 1914, when he should have been at this...
They don't mention a missing leg or anything like that in the text.
They don't, do they?
Right.
They don't.
So that's where Hannay's doing his meeting in London.
Yes.
So he's come from Scotland, he's contacted the police,
and
then he's come into London and he's gone to this meeting at Queen's Gate. He's basically gate-crashed it, hasn't he?
That's it.
And they're like, who are you?
Who are you? But in this case, Buckin would have known all of them.
Yeah,
he would have sucked up to all of these people.
Yeah, because he was involved in a lot of that kind of propaganda stuff and everything, wasn't he?
Absolutely. So that's set the scene, hasn't it?
Yeah, very good.
That's why we're here.
I'm here at North Foreland Golf Club, a clifftop course on the Kent coast at Broadstairs. It's four times been used for open qualifying, and it's very different to some of the other Kent coast courses. It's not a links. It's got an interesting selection of holes, starts off with a short par four with one of the smallest greens I've ever played into. That's an interesting opening. Another short par four after that, but perhaps the pick of the front nine holes are the fifth over here and the seventh, another par three over there. Again, a magnificent backdrop with Kingsgate Castle up on the cliffs, set in an imperious position overlooking the ocean. It's a good first nine here, and then you come out onto the back nine, a little bit more open and a little bit more room to perhaps open your shoulders.
I borrowed Scaife's telescope and before lunch went for a walk along the rough. I kept well behind the rows of villas and found a good observation point on the edge of the golf course. There I had a view of the line of turf along the cliff top, with seats placed at intervals, and the little square plots railed in and planted with bushes, whence the staircases descended to the beach. I saw Trafalgar Lodge very plainly, a red brick villa with a veranda, a tennis lawn behind, and in front the ordinary seaside flower garden full of marguerites and scraggy geraniums. There was a flagstaff from which an enormous Union Jack hung limply in the still air.
He doesn't mention the young Kentish man covered in tattoos, not wearing a shirt, cycling past while he's writing that bit.
He doesn't mention the people of Kent very much, does he, to be fair?
So we're sat on the rough, I think, aren't we?
I think we're sat on the rough.
Which is the pathway along the top of the cliffs.
Yes.
Behind us is the North Foreland Lighthouse, which, strangely, John Buchan fails to mention
never
at all.
Mentions a lighthouse.
Because actually, if you wanted to get a view of the houses around here, the perfect place would be the North Foreland Lighthouse. But we think our hero, Richard Hannay, is stood around here.
We think this is
here.
The right place.
So we think John Buchan's been here.
Yes. Well, we know John Buchan's been here because it's a historical fact that he wrote most of this book whilst convalescing.
In a house just a bit further
on
the cliff.
In North Foreland that we're going to go take a look at. So he obviously knew this area.
Yeah.
And then when we talk about where Trafalgar House... Now, Trafalgar House is where the Germans are hiding out before they're going to go down the steps from the cliff and head off in a boat back to Germany with Britain's naval secrets.
On this extraordinarily convoluted and mad plan.
There has to be cliffs.
Yes.
Check. There has to be a golf course.
Yes, because he talks about standing on the edge of the golf course.
Because you can't have a story about right-wing people without mentioning a golf course, can you, Lloyd?
Tim's very near a golf course. It has a strange effect on him. It's like the golf field. It turns him into a virulent anti-golf Nazi.
Well, you're not going to like this golf course.
Why not?
The North Foreland Golf Course.
Right.
Because it was bought up in the late 1890s. By Lord Northcliffe.
Oh, okay.
The founder of your favourite newspaper and
the
mine.
The Daily Mail.
The Daily Mail.
Right.
So, we've got him living round here.
Well, I mean, if I look over to my left, away from North Foreland Lighthouse and back towards Margate, round the coast.
Yeah.
I can see the tower of a rather Gothic-looking structure.
That's his
looming
house.
Looming up over a more modern
his
house.
His castle.
He built a castle here, right?
Yeah. Is it Kingsgate Castle? I think it's called that, yeah.
It's just ridiculous. Talk about heirs.
Well, he didn't just have that house. He had one at the other end of the golf course as well. He built there. I look at kentonline.co.uk. I found a great article called The Golf Mad Daily Mail Founder's Life in Broadstairs. Mm. The alligators he kept in his garden and the day a U-boat tried to blow him up.
Wow. Do you know what? That sounds like a Daily Mail headline. Daily
Not
Mail
bad,
Online
is it?
Headline.
John Buchan must have known him.
Right.
Because they both worked in the Ministry of Information during
Buchan was
the
a big player in the First
World War.
The propaganda world.
Well, Northcliffe was as well.
Yeah.
So they would have worked together quite closely. And if he was holidaying down here and he knows all these people, he's going to pay a visit to the Northcliffe, isn't he?
Yeah, he's probably having lunch there two or three times a
week. He's playing a round of golf if he's got time. Now, let me tell you just a little bit about Alfred Harmsworth, Lord Northcliffe.
Founder of the Daily Mail.
He bought the North Foreland Golf Club in 1891. He built a Tudor home down by the golf course, as well as this magnificent castle at the top. Kept two alligators in a giant mud bath.
Two alligators in a giant mud bath?
Yeah. And a stable full of motor cars.
He's a Bond villain. He's very much a Bond villain.
He completely is.
He's got a lair. He's actually got a lair.
Yes.
With alligators.
Yes.
Right.
Absolutely. He bought. Do you know that he, after he got the Daily Mirror, he also acquired the Observer and the Times. At one point, he owned the Times, the Observer, the Mirror, and the Mail.
Yeah.
So he owned sort of 40% of all readership or something. Yeah. It says here that one journalist wrote to him, "Next to the Kaiser, Lord Northcliffe has done more than any living man to bring about the war."
Wow, is that what they said about him?
Yeah, because he stirred up such massive anti-German feeling in his papers.
Wow.
He was so anti-German that he was targeted by the Germans during the war. And this business about, they sent a U-boat to fire on his house.
What, from out here on the channel?
Yes.
Blimey.
Missing its intended target, but hitting a cottage in one of his gardeners, killing a young mother and baby.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. They didn't repair the cottage. They left the hole as a reminder of how dastardly the Germans were.
Right.
That they would kill, they were prepared to kill women and babies.
Is there any memorial to the young woman and baby anywhere?
I don't know. I think, you know, as you can tell, it sort of made an impression. So look, I'm thinking that he's quite a good character for Buchan to be. He's on this side, watching all this going on the other side. And I bet you he had a giant Union Jack.
Well, the other point you made was that if Hannay walks across the golf course,
yeah,
to come to this side, he's coming from the Kingsgate side, which means he's staying in a hotel which is right next to Northcliffe's castle.
He's basically staying at Northcliffe's house.
So I reckon he's at Northcliffe's castle. They're all in it together.
They are. And massive anti-German paranoia.
Yeah.
Of course there's going to be Germans down here. Yeah. Yes, I've seen some people behaving very oddly
down here.
I've seen
them playing tennis.
Yes. They're not playing golf, they're playing tennis. They must be outsiders.
Bang! All your troubles in your old kit bag and smile, smile, smile. While you've a lucifer to light your bag, smile, boys, and smile. What were you for worrying? It never was worthwhile. Boom! Bang! All your troubles in your old kit bag and smile.
Presently, a third figure arrived, a young man on a bicycle with a bag of golf clubs slung on his back. He strolled round to the tennis lawn and was welcomed riotously by the players. Evidently, they were chaffing him, and their chaff sounded horribly English. Then the plump man, mopping his brow with a silk handkerchief, announced that he must have a tub. I heard his very words. "I've got into a proper lather," he said. "This will bring down my weight and my handicap, Bob. I'll take you on tomorrow and give you a stroke a hole." You couldn't find anything much more English than that.
"Yes," said the Scotsman.
Said the Scot.
He's suspicious of them. They're too English.
He's looking down the hill, down towards a house that's along the cliff edge, along the cliff promenade, and he's seeing three men who are in the house.
Yes.
Who are just kind of pretending, or seem to be living a kind of pretty standard English seaside life.
Three gentlemen would live together in a house.
Golf, tennis, chaffing.
There'd be you, me and someone else.
Yeah, lots of chaffing.
Yeah.
He thinks they're Germans.
Well, why he doesn't recognise them?
He's seen them all.
They've tried to kill him several times.
He's been in one of their house and had a long conversation with them. And he's still like, I'm not sure it's the same man.
I'm not sure. Something's wrong.
Which house is he looking at, though, Tim? That's the question, right?
Now we're here.
We're looking for Trafalgar House, aren't we, in the book? It's called Trafalgar House.
Yeah, and we're thinking, well, he's just taken his house that he's in and he's just used that as the right location.
Mm.
But now we're thinking something a little bit different.
Well, we've slightly been given the nod by a chap called David Seabrook, who wrote a book called All the Devils Are Here, which is about wandering around Kent and encountering strange stories. And
well, if you're crazy. A loyal listener, you'll know that we mentioned that book in our very first Curiously Specific podcast.
Yeah, The Mystery of Edwin Drood.
Yeah.
And he talks about Buchan, and he talks about this stretch of coast.
He really does.
And he mentions a house called Naldera.
Yep. And we're looking at it
right now.
It's bang opposite the steps. It's just two doors down from where Buchan was.
Yeah.
It's looking right over the sea here. You can probably hear, we've heard...
I just realised it's an anagram of Alderaan.
What's that?
It was where Princess Leia comes from in Star Wars. That can't be a coincidence.
No, that can't be a coincidence.
So Naldera was built by Lord Curzon, right?
Lord Curzon.
The last Viceroy of India.
That's right. Do you know what I think? Did we talk about him in the Remains of the Day?
We may have mentioned him.
As a man who was friendly with the Germans?
Friendly with the Germans. He was one of the people involved in the Anglo-German Association, wasn't he?
Well, I don't know. I think he died too early for that, actually.
Possibly.
Anyway, he was very pro-German before the First World War.
Yes.
He actually went to a quite serious conference with them, with the Germans, to try and avoid war and have peace.
Was he pro-German or anti-war?
Well, tricky. Yeah. Apparently he spoke fluent German.
We shall come on to his offspring.
Yes, and he had three daughters.
One
of his daughters is very important to this story, called Cynthia.
Yeah.
And the reason is, because this throws forward quite weirdly, Cynthia Curzon became Cynthia Moseley.
As in, Baronet Oswald Ernest Moseley. That one.
That guy.
Britain's foremost fascist in the 1930s.
Basically, Moseley would have come down here to see his fiancée, then his wife, and would have been hanging out in that house.
Yeah.
So that's two pro-Germans in the house,
perhaps
playing tennis out the back.
So I'm now imagining our friend John Buchan in his QB house, which is literally 50 yards from Naldera.
Yeah.
It's one, two. There's a modern house, kind of quite a small modern house. Then there's another older house. Then there's QB house.
Yes.
I'm imagining him in there looking out, and he's looking out from his writing garret.
Yes.
He can see Naldera. There's might even be able to see Lord Northcliffe's house on the other side of Joss Bay.
The devils are all here.
So he's got a pro-German there.
Yeah.
He's got an anti-German up there, and he's writing a story about Germans up to no good.
Pretty good, isn't it?
It's quite evocative, isn't it?
Poor old Curzon had to resign from the government during the war because of rumours of his pro-German proclivities.
Right.
Mainly, of course, set out by the Northcliffe newspapers to discredit him and get him out of the picture.
Yeah, and Buchan's sort of on the Northcliffe side of this particular fence,
right? So poor old Curzon's got two of them on either side of him plotting to
well, given that John Buchan made a big name for himself in the First World War writing propaganda...
Yep.
Is he writing for the Foreign Office?
Yes, right.
Are we beginning to think this book itself is a piece of propaganda that is designed to discredit Lord Curzon and his ilk?
Oh, I think that's...
Are we able to make that case?
Well, this book came out in October 1915.
Mm-hmm.
The Battle of Loos was in September 1915. And that, of course, was the first major... sort of setback. So news was coming back that this was all a horrible thing. Now, this book, 39 Steps, was proved to be very popular
in the
trenches. So it came out a month later, maybe to
boost morale.
Anti-German feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure
that
might
be part
of it.
Here where there's a famous pro-German aristocrat.
Who then had to resign.
And then had to resign. It's all a bit too... coincidental.
It's quite good, isn't it? If only he had a big old Union Jack flag out there, that would have put
you can imagine one flying
on it.
You can imagine one flying.
Oswald Moseley is very keen on this family, by the way. Talk about real pro-Germans. Because not only did he marry Lady Cynthia, he then had an affair with her younger sister, Lady Alexandra, who was his mistress for quite a while. So he slept with both sisters.
Blimey, really?
And briefly, he had a little bit of hanky-panky with Lord Curzon's second wife, the stepmother, Grace Curzon.
Blimey, he's got a bit of Alan Clark about him, hasn't he?
I know. So he bedded all three.
Blimey,
all the three women who were in that house.
All three. You're Alan Clark.
So he had a lot of energy, Oswald Moseley. Can't
believe. Yeah. All those black shirts.
But he liked that family.
He really did.
He liked that family.
We live in a period in which politicians are not very popular. And believe me, you have my sympathy. Politicians are regarded as people who have learnt to talk but not to act. And you demand action, and rightly demand it.
My first job was to keep going for the next 3 weeks. It was now the 24th day of May, and that meant 20 days of hiding before I could venture to approach the powers that be.
I reckoned that two sets of people would be looking for me, Scudder's enemies to put me out of existence, and the police who would want me for Scudder's murder. It was going to be a giddy hunt, and it was queer how the prospect comforted me. So we've stayed up on the cliffs before queer. We get to the beach. We've decided that we need to talk about dating.
We do.
And whether John Buchan is serious about dates. From the get-go, he sounds as if he's really serious.
Yes.
Because he says, it's the 24th of May, this story's going to finish on the 15th of June.
Yeah.
Work it out for yourself as you go. So, yeah. Obviously, we did.
Well, obviously, we did.
It does kind of work that it starts on the 23rd of May.
Yeah, and so have you done your thing of mapping out the dates?
Yeah, so you can see on my book, I've gone, look, okay, that's the 24th. He goes to sleep at one point, I've got the 26th.
Why he has to wait for 3 weeks is more mystifying.
Well, that's a bit odd. 27th, I've got it all worked out where all the days go.
Yeah.
Now, look, it kind of works until when he gets to the turn of June, he's up in Scotland. There's a moment where he's escaped the house that we found where he blows it up and escapes. And he goes to find the roadman. And it's the 1st of June. And the 1st of June, he says, why are ye that come stravagin' here on Sabbath morning?
God, you're doing
that. Shall I try that again? Why are ye... I were doomed, were
if you've
doomed.
Not read this
I'll
book,
just do a quick
if you've
warm
not
up.
Read this book, Buchan tries to finessely write
I'll
out the Scottish accent.
I'll just do a quick
accent.
Warm up. We're doomed, Mr. Murring, we're doomed. Why are ye that come stravagin' here on Sabbath morning? Is that better? Is that better?
Well, I think concepts like better or worse are irrelevant at
right,
this point.
Right, so here's the get-out. So he says, I'd lost count of all the days, so the Sabbath was the reason for his strange decorum.
So he's got a get-out.
Well, he says he lost count, but he says it's the Sabbath. No, it isn't.
Okay.
It isn't, because it's the 1st of June. By his own counting, if I go through the book,
yeah.
It's the 1st of June.
Which is not a Sunday.
The 1st of June in 1914... is a Monday.
Ooh.
A 1st of June in 1913 Ooh. Is a Sunday. A little bit loose there.
Yeah, that's right. Bad.
Then he's so badly beaten up, he has to stay with the roadman for the better part of 10 days. And then he says he's not going to take off till the 12th day of June.
Hmm.
So there's a little bit, he allows himself that gap.
Yeah.
So that's all very good. And then it does kind of work. That he basically gets back down to the 13th, he finds the spy master. 14th, he's... at Queen Anne's Gate, 15th, yep. He's down here.
Yeah, 15th
of June.
And it all
kicks off on the 15th.
1914.
Yeah, it has to be 1914. I'll be posting the calendar.
So 10th is a Monday, 11th Tuesday, 12th Wednesday, 13th, 14th. It's a Saturday.
Saturday.
It's Saturday the 15th of June.
That's right. That's why they're busy playing golf and tennis.
Yeah, it's
on
a normal Saturday out.
Right, so you would say, therefore, that his dating's not bad, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You'd think you'd get high marks, wouldn't you?
I mean, I give him particularly high marks. There's a key plot point, right?
Yes.
A key device, which is the tide.
Oh, yes.
He talks about how he locates the location because there's a clue in Scudder's book that says the steps are...
39 steps.
39 steps, 10:17 p.m. 10:17 p.m. And he goes, where is it high tide at 10:17 p.m?
I hope you've done your homework
here. On June the 15th. I'm getting this from the British Oceanographic Data Centre.
Well done, sir.
And I actually found the tide gauge, which is the handwritten log of the tides, for Sheerness.
Oh.
In 1915.
If you support us on Patreon, you get these links.
I'll put it up, by the way. Sheerness is the closest place I could find to Broadstairs on that map, but it's just not far. Sheerness, on the 15th of June... 1914, it was high tide.
Yes.
At 11:10.
Ooh.
Now, if you look up the tide tables, the modern tide tables,
yeah.
You will find that Broadstairs, yeah?
Yeah.
Broadstairs is 45 minutes later than Sheerness on the tide tables.
Good.
But we're not at Broadstairs. We're a bit further around the coast than Broadstairs.
Right.
So I think he's absolutely spot on the tide table.
Oh.
I think 10:17 p.m. on June the 15th, 1914,
yeah.
Is exactly right.
I'll tell you what I'm giving him full bad marks for, though.
What?
Is the last paragraph of this book.
Okay.
And this is terrible.
Okay. You look angry.
I am angry. I'm furious. 3 weeks later, as all the world knows... we went to war.
Oh.
3 weeks later from the 15th of June. Now, we all know when World War One started, and the reason we know is because you were very insistent in our Wise Children podcast that the beginning of the World War One was the most salient date to fix the dating on for that book.
And I was right.
So, here we go.
August, right?
4th of August, 1914, 7 weeks later, as all the world knows. 7 weeks, not 3 weeks. That is a heinous error. A heinous error. If I'm sitting in the trenches...
That's quite shocking.
If I'm sitting in the trenches of the Battle of Loos, and I'm reading this book and I'm really enjoying it, and then right at the end...
Has anyone else pointed that out?
Says 3 weeks later, as all the world knows. And I'm fighting this war, and I'd say, hold on a minute. It's 7 weeks.
When was
this book's rubbish?
When was Archduke Ferdinand actually shot?
Ah, well, that's not, oh, you were saying that's the no. It says we went to war. Don't start with when you said.
I'm not trying to make cases for him, but I'm just trying to think what he might be thinking of.
Yeah. So what? 3 weeks later, as all the world knows, we went to war. So is he talking
28th
about
of June?
The what?
28th of June. So say 2 weeks later.
Well.
It's wrong. It's just wrong.
It's all hands up. Unless a week later, did the Austro-Hungarians declare war on Serbia? A week later?
I don't know.
I think they may have done. But that suggests that when he says we, he's talking about the Austro-Hungarians. He's let his guard slip there a bit, hasn't he? Dear, oh dear.
Dear, oh.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
We had a padre, you know, who preached to us on Sundays. I remember him saying, "By next Sunday, many of you will have ceased to exist," which he thought was a cheerful note to strike. But against that, I'm bound to say that when the battle was on, he was in and out carrying people, carrying people, carrying people. So he quitted himself well.
So it's come to the point where we have to rate John Buchan.
Yes,
we might want to rate the location. We're sort of sitting on the beach just past Joss Bay.
Yeah, on our way to the steps.
On our way to the steps.
Yeah.
In terms of a location, 10 out of 10, Tim.
It's lovely, isn't it?
Very nice.
Really, these white cliffs are enthralling, actually.
The chalky cliffs.
Yeah, but also because they're stratified. They've got these sort of layers, so they look like they're sort of stacked, don't they?
Yeah, it's lovely. So we like to give two ratings, don't we? We give a rating for how seriously the author takes dates and locations in their book.
Yep.
And how well they've pulled it off. Mm. And we also give a value for money rating. How good is the book? How worthy of your time is it?
I see you've climbed down from calling it artistic rating.
Well,
you've climbed down from that because you're worried about putting yourself in a position of judgment about how good a book is.
Well, being a member of the elite, I'm obviously trying to downplay that aspect of my personal history, because I'm obviously a man of the people.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. And so, well, I like John Buck, and I want to be writing wood pulp thrillers.
Why are we bothering with a mark? Why don't we put it to the people?
Yeah, put it out to the people.
Put it to the people. They give a mark.
Fortunately, they're always wrong.
Anyway, so what is your artistic impression mark for this book?
Well, we listened to a very good Matthew Sweet free thinking episode from Radio 3.
Yeah.
In which he was discussing this book with three experts. And there was a very interesting section in that where they essentially discussed the rather ridiculous plot twists, plot holes, weird things happening, like him not being able to recognise people he's met two times before, disguises, coincidences. Why are the German spies got a house in Scotland? All these kinds of things. Why do the plot seems to rely on the Germans just hanging around for a few days? It's full of nonsense, frankly. And the people on the podcast were sort of making the case for Buck and expressing the paranoia and uncertainty of the 1913, 1914, and they describe it as sort of mystic sort of vibe, paranoia, you're never sure where everything are. I think that's nonsense. I think he just got a lot of stuff wrong.
Ooh.
I'm giving him a low mark.
Are you?
Yeah, because I think...
But it's a classic.
It's a classic that does a bad job. I think there's passages that are beautifully well written, but the fundamental engine of the plot is ridiculous.
Gosh.
It's a nonsense. He's getting a 5 from me, Tim.
I'm amazed. I'm amazed because usually you give people high marks for doing what they say on the tin, which is he was writing a thriller.
If you write a thriller, it has to obey the laws of thrillers.
There were no laws. The laws.
That's a fair point, but we're both big fans of The Riddle of the Sands, right?
Yes.
There's nothing as implausible in The Riddle of the Sands as there is in this book.
Well,
The Riddle of the Sands runs like a machine.
Well, a very tedious machine.
It goes on too long, I'll give you that. And that this book has a... If this book had been any longer, I would have given it an even lower mark.
Gosh.
It's got its length plays for it because it's very short.
Right.
And it rattles along. But it rattles along like a out of control, badly designed, broken jalopy. So I'm giving him a 5. I'm not happy about it.
Okay, I'm going to give him a higher mark. I'm going to give him a 7.
Okay.
And I'm giving him a 7 because something you just said, which is, I think that the form follows the content, that this book is about a man being rattled along by planes chasing him, fast trains, the modern world of technology sort of bombarding him and propelling him around the place in a nonsensical way that he can't find the pattern for, and he's seeking a pattern for it and a reason, and therefore starts confecting weird conspiracy theories in order to try and make some sense out of the chaos of the modern world. And that's represented by the slightly chaotic nature of the structure of the book.
Was that your audition tape for Radio 3?
Thank you very much.
What a load of rubbish.
No, it's not. I think... Well, the other point is, every chapter is its own discrete adventure.
Yes, as a publishing exercise, it's incredibly successful.
Yeah, and he says it's the adventure of the innkeeper, the adventure of the professor,
yeah,
the adventure of this. So they're discrete little chapters. And as you said in the car coming down here, you said they're just the right length to send you to sleep at night, aren't they?
I did say that.
Yeah?
I did say that.
So,
but makes me sound like an incredibly old person.
Now, in terms
of dating, and
well, I think you know my views on this from the previous discussion about dating. Any man who doesn't know when World War I started is getting a low rating in my book,
particularly a book that was notionally about World War I.
Yeah, exactly. That's an immediate 5-point demerit.
Oh wow, okay.
For that.
So that's like going bankrupt in the Premier League.
It's someone.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, that's a good point. You should make it 6 points, because then it's more like the football demerit.
All right.
6 points down. He's already on a 4.
He's on a 4.
Before he even starts.
Okay.
Okay. Do I give him any more than a 4? No, I take another one off because...
the Sabbath.
Yeah, because he says it's a Sunday when it's a Monday. So he's got that wrong as well. He's down to three. He's clinging on by his fingertips here. But after that, he stays with the three because I think his travel times are good. That the general timeline from the 23rd of May to the 15th of June is good.
Yeah.
That all works. We like his locations. I'm giving him a three.
Okay, well, I'm going to give him a point back for the tide times.
Oh, fair play.
So I'm going to bring him back up to four.
Okay, that's still poor, though, isn't it?
For the tide times. But it's still not good. It's still not good.
He's not at the high table, Buckham, which I think is a surprise. If you said at the beginning of doing Curiosity Specific, in fact, I know this for a fact, when I said to people, this is the stupid kind of stuff that we do, that we go out and try and locate...
A lot of people say, you're doing 39 steps.
They say, oh, you're doing the 39 steps then, they say. Don't they?
They think it's going to work like that, right?
They think it's going to work.
Yeah.
But it doesn't quite work, does it?
No.
And I have to say, some of the kudos that it has, in terms of its high rating, is kudos that people actually have for the film. The Hitchcock film.
The Hitchcock film. And also it's kudos given by people who actually haven't done the research.
They haven't been here, mate. They haven't walked down the beach in their bare feet.
So,
the things we do. "Schnell, Franz," cried a voice. "Das Boot! Das Boot!" As it spoke, I saw two of my fellows emerge on the moonlit lawn. The young dark man leapt for the window, was through it and over the low fence before a hand could touch him. I grappled the old chap. Oh, I don't think he means that. I grappled the old chap, and the room seemed to fill with figures. I saw the plump one collared, but my eyes were all for the out-of-doors where Franz sped on over the road towards the railed entrance to the beach stairs. One man followed him, but he had no chance. The gate of the stairs locked behind the fugitive, and I stood staring with my hands on the old boy's throat for such a time as a man might take to descend those steps to the sea. The old man was looking at me with blazing eyes. "He is safe," he cried. "You cannot follow in time. He is gone. He has triumphed. Der schwarze Stein ist in der Siegeskrone."
Brilliant. I do love your German.
Well, I was taught everything I know about that from Lord Northcliffe. There's a yacht.
There's a yacht. Hey, we're sitting at the bottom of those very steps.
Amazing, right?
We've walked all the way around from the top.
Well, you're not allowed in at the top.
So, you know, something that would have taken us 10 seconds from the top has taken us 20 minutes to walk around because we had to walk around the headland. So we're now at the beach, we're at the bottom of the steps. There's another gate halfway up, so we can't walk up from the beach, which is disappointing. But we're watching a yacht sail by, sailing into the wind. It's looking quite tough.
Yes, ready to pick up a fugitive.
He's on the starboard tack, Tim.
Okay. Thank you, Captain.
That's all right.
The yacht in the book is called the Ariadne.
The Ariadne, and actually, unbeknownst to the Germans, the English have already seized it. Actually, all that business on the steps is entirely immaterial.
Why do they wait so long to play a game of bridge before they arrest them all?
Yeah. It's all very mysterious. As is the number of the steps, right?
Ah, that's true.
So I've walked up from the beach, because obviously I'm a much faster walker than you, so I got here first.
Well, I took my shoes off to get
took your shoes off, you're like Robinson
toes.
Crusoe. And I actually walked up to the first gate, which isn't even halfway up.
Yeah.
And that's 29 steps. All the way up to the top. Now, we mentioned David Seabrook before. He actually managed to walk all the way up and down. And
yes, when was that published? The early 2000s, wasn't
it? Yeah. He counted 115 steps in total, but only 78 original oak steps.
Yep.
And then he says, who was the friend who allegedly advised John Buchan to halve that number for the title of his novel?
Nice.
Which I've not failed to find a reference for anywhere else.
Okay.
But then he goes on to say, mathematician David Wells wrote that 39 appears to be the first uninteresting number, which of course makes it an especially interesting number because it is the smallest number to have the property of being uninteresting. Numerologists believe that the number 3 is a trinity, a completion, absorbing 1 plus 2. It resolves the conflict of duality and provides the impetus to act and create. 9 is 3 times as powerful, the number of karma, destiny.
and yet the suspenseful incompleteness of 3 and 9 together is immediately apparent. It's a number that anticipates the next number. It's a fictional number as well. Give 39 as your age and see who believes you. Also like the rather weird historical parallel that 39 is obviously 1939, the outbreak of the Second World War.
He's throwing forward.
Which is a given.
He's prefigured. Well, he would have known also that another load of sort of BNP Nazis were going to turf up in that house in Aldera. But that's another story, of which you can get information on our show notes if you support us on Patreon. Thank you very much.
Always be selling.
Yeah.
But it's great to be here, if a little bit disappointing that we can't actually go up the steps.
Yeah, it's a shame, isn't it?
I'd like to put a special shout out to the North Foreland Estate Limited for shutting off this step for any public use. Presumably because one of their lawyers has advised them about public liability insurance and they don't want to. So the only people who can use this, I assume, are property owners on the North Foreland Estate.
Yes. But the thing is, that what they should do is they should have an open day on the 15th of June every year.
Yeah, absolutely. And invite some Germans. You can chase them down the steps.
There was a German cruiser called the Ariadne, you know.
Was there?
Yes. It was quite active in this sea here during the war.
Okay.
And it now lies at the bottom of the sea.
Really?
Not far from Heligoland, because it was sunk in the Battle of Heligoland.
What kind of a vessel was it?
Well, it was a cruiser.
So it was a warship?
Yeah, so it wouldn't have been a yacht.
I think that might be the plane coming to find us.
Yeah.
It's come down from Scotland.
So it wouldn't have been a yacht, but as a name, he might have known about the names of German cruisers.
But as a location, it's well worth a visit. Park yourself up in Joss Bay. Wait for low tide. Don't try and come at high tide.
Yeah, make sure you leave in time as well.
Walk around the headland, about 10, 15 minutes from the steps down from the car park. You will find...
Here it is.
...the bottom of the 39 steps.
Yeah, it works.
It really works.
I'd be interested to know if anyone can check that there were originally 78. I think that's a really interesting idea.
Yeah. So if anyone knows, let us know.
Yeah. The 78 steps.
Doesn't work, does it?
Well, it's interesting, does it? Is there any other number that works? Also, if they were too little, like the 13 steps, that'd be a really tiny cliff, wouldn't it?
So you couldn't have anything over 100. The 100 and something steps.
Well, that would puff you out, wouldn't it?
Like the 92 steps. The 93 steps, no.
Yeah. You see?
The 85 steps.
It's quite a good one because it's sort of...
It's mellifluous.
Well, it tells you how high the cliff is, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The cliff isn't that high.
Yeah. Well, it's twice as high as the steps imply.
If it's 139 steps, I wouldn't do it.
Man just walked past and gave us a funny look.
Well, we're two men talking nonsense in a tunnel.
We are. Not for the first time.
But for the last time this series. So for the last time this series, we need to say thank you.
For sticking with us for the whole of series 3. Listener,
that's 30 episodes,
30 episodes,
books.
15 books,
amazing, and without a break, intense. Yeah. So thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's been good.
And thank you to the artist Learning Music on the Free Music Archive for our bassy loop theme tune. The track is called Trebek's Lament on Learning Music. Mm. Check it out. Now, in terms of the music that I've been using for this episode, I've tried to stick to the rule that it's all sourced from roughly 1915.
Give or take. Yeah.
So I raided liberally the Internet Archive. By the way, the Internet Archive is on a funding drive. When you go to the Internet Archive, you'll see that you can very easily make a donation, and I'd recommend that you do. I have done so.
Absolutely. We both donate to Wikipedia as well, don't
yes,
we?
Yes, we do.
These are the public commons these days, and we should all support them.
Absolutely, we should. So, a lot of World War One music. Pack up your troubles in your old kit bag.
And smile, smile, smile.
That's it. Oscar Siegel and Columbia Stella Quartet. Oh, they had good names in those
great
days,
names.
Didn't they? It's a long, long way to Tipperary. The Victor Novelty Band.
Oh,
that's a good name, isn't it? That's what Blur should have called themselves. Don't you think?
That would have been their unreleased concept album.
Yeah. Then we've got a lot of loud Scottish singing,
yeah.
which I liked very much.
Yeah,
I've got quite
good,
addicted
yeah.
to it, by Leon Lischner and the Clan Stewart Pipe Band.
Lischner? That sounds like a German name.
Well, could be.
So there's a German in Scotland recording.
Well, perfect, right?
Yeah.
Perfect.
Fits in.
That was the Scots Wahey. which is excellent. I recommend it.
When are we
enough.
Doing our Welsh novel? Well, yeah. Get some proper singing in.
Series 4, mate. Series 4. Yeah. Oh, you never. You know, I said, oh, well, I'm not going to fake the C sound at all. Oh, well, I did.
Okay. Okay. Can I just say, during the Widow of Bath, our previous episode had a lot of C sound in it. Yeah. None of it faked.
Oh.
All recorded in the field.
That is the difference between you and me, isn't it?
Absolutely.
You wandering around a beach for about half an hour trying to get a decent sound. Me spending 2 minutes on downloading something off the internet.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Now I feel stupid.
What we have is from Freesound. Both of these are Creative Commons licensed. We've got from Inspector J. Thank you, Inspector J, for Ambience Seaside Waves. And we've also got from Bonnie Orbit. Thank you, Bonnie Orbit. Walking on Stony Beach. I also found the national anthem of the German Empire, Heil der im Siegerkranz.
So this was the one that was before Deutsche über alles.
Yes, which is actually the same tune as ours.
Yes.
God Save the Queen. But
oh, really?
Yeah, it's the same
tune.
Oh,
I thought that was a joke. I thought that was German singing the English national anthem.
No,
so
no.
So that was the national anthem?
No, you see, the joke is the Germans go, oh, there's the English singing our national anthem.
So we both had the same national anthem?
Yes.
That's very strange, isn't it?
We should go back to that. It would make football matches so much more interesting, wouldn't it?
It would. They could play them both at the same time.
That would wind everybody up.
It really would. It really would.
And then I went a little bit crazy for Sibelius.
You like a little bit Sibelius,
oh,
don't you?
Oh, well, the Fifth Symphony in E-flat. It was first performed in 1915. Well, they did rewrite it several times, I believe.
Right.
And there's also a bit of Strauss Alpine Symphony, 1915.
I like a bit of Strauss.
Well, that one's
Richard
got
Strauss.
That's got a good air of menace.
Yeah, a lot of his stuff does.
Which I thought went very well with a speech by Sir Oswald Mosley. Mm. And then I used also Voices of the First World War, Battle of Loos, which is actually a BBC radio documentary clip that's on YouTube. And then you might hear some slightly intense violin music at one point, which sounds quite modern, and it is quite modern. But the reason is it's a piece by Hoshiko Yamane, which I really liked, which is her playing live, a live soundtrack to Charlie Chaplin's By the Sea.
Ah,
By the Sea. See what
good.
I've done there?
Yeah, lovely.
Released 1915.
Very good.
So I think I've done all right.
That's very good.
It's a musical journey.
You spent a lot of time on those music links.
I enjoyed it.
Not as much time as you spent discussing who could be the cast of The Widow of Bath if we cast it in 1952. You spent a long time on Discord, so ask the Discord server discussing that. If you give us £5 on our Patreon account, as opposed to the standard price of £2, you can join us on our Discord server.
Yes.
Where we have been discussing Canadians. We've been discussing how you might cast a 1952 production of The Widow of Bath.
Yeah, if you bought the book rights in 52 and got into production in 54.
Yeah.
Who would you cast?
So shout out to Rob Bevan, who's our latest Discord server member.
Hello, Rob.
Do you know him? Never heard of him.
Never heard of him.
No, complete stranger. And he's not said anything on there. So
he hasn't turned up.
He's a man of mystery.
No, confession time. I work with Rob Bevan.
So welcome, Rob, to our happy band.
Yeah, you've come in just as we've stopped. Just as we've stopped.
Because we do need to say that we are going to be taking a break at the end of this series. We're both a little bit wrung out. And we would quite like to read some books that we're not going to do podcasts about for a while.
That'd be good.
We're going to take an unspecified break. We don't quite know how long. We'll see when our batteries are recharged. Mm. While we're away, though, we're not going to be charging our Patreon subscribers for basically not having anything. So from August, we will be suspending Patreon payments.
But it'll still be there for you, the stuff.
All the stuff will still be there for you. We're not going to take that stuff away. We'll have to think about when we come back and what Series 4 looks like.
We'll let you know.
We'll let you know. So this is not quite a Dear John letter, but it's we're on a break.
As the
kids say.
I'm going to spend more time with my family and less time with you.
I'm not sure my family is still around.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a lie. I'm going to be spending most of the time on my own. Or with the dog.
And very much enjoying it. So thank you for sticking with us through Series 3.
Yes, thank you.
We hope you've had a good time. We will be back with something or other at some point in the future. And we'll see you then.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.